Now, what I want to share with you today is that somehow or other, we have to try to develop that very natural connection with Krishna. Spiritual life is not just about duty and determination. It's not just about the rules, the regulations, the rituals. It's not, my friends, just about being a good sadhaka. Some people think the goal of Krishna consciousness is to be a good sadhaka. Actually, that's not quite the teaching of our acharyas. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be a good sadhaka. A good sadhaka means what? Someone who wakes up every day on time, someone who chants their rounds, someone who regularly engages in study of the scriptures, one who does all the different services required and asked of them with a view to purifying themselves. This is what it means to be a good sadhaka. We must do this. Because Rupa Goswami says, if you don't do sadhana, there will be no bhava. There will be no transcendental emotion. There will be no natural affection. There will be no spontaneous traction towards Krishna if you don't do sadhana. Therefore, sadhana is essential. It's said that the sadhana of the Goswamis was so powerful. Sankhya purvaka nama gana natibi kalavasani krito. They were counting everything religiously. How many obeisances they were paying every day. How many rounds they were chanting every day. How many times they were circumambulating Giriraj every day. Their vows were like lines on a stone. You could not rub them out. However, there's another aspect to the Goswamis. Hey Radhe Vrajadevi ke chalalite, hey Nanda suno kuta, Goshanta viti sarvato Vrajapure, keder mahavivalo. They were running around Govardhan Hill saying, where is Krishna? Where is Radharani? Maybe they are here, maybe they are there. Gopi Bhavara Samritab Dilahari, they were absorbed in the mood and the intensity and the affection that the gopis had, that bhava, gopi bhava. So you got these both sides to the Goswamis, these incredibly strong, determined, strict, austere sadhakas. And on the other side, these heartfelt bhaktas who were just purely in love with Krishna. Now, what we have to do somehow in our life is, number one, be good sadhakas. However, as I mentioned, the goal of life is not to just be a good sadhaka. The goal of life is that by all your sadhana, you will develop some bhava, some transcendental spiritual emotion. And therefore, Rupa Goswami says, Kriti sadhya bhavat sadhya, sadhya sa sadhana abhida, Nitya siddhyasya bhavasya prakatyam riddhi sadhyata. The potential of sadhana is that it has the ability to awaken bhava. In all of our lives, we pray that some bhava, some natural emotion for Krishna will come about. Sometimes we get a glimpse, we see the deities, sometimes we feel very emotional. We're in a kirtan, we feel emotional. Sometimes we feel like, my God, I'm getting some ecstatic symptoms here, isn't it? Shaking of the body, hair standing on end, tears coming to the eyes. For most of us, it might just be like, nowadays, if we get those symptoms, we get kind of scared because we think like maybe it's like coronavirus or something, you know? Well, for most of us, those symptoms only come if we've got the flu or something like that. But these are the symptoms that come if you have some bhava, shiva, yeah, your hair stand on end, tears coming to the eyes, softening of the voice becomes very, very faint. These symptoms of bhava are there. And sometimes we get glimpses, but most of the time we're practicing Krishna consciousness just on the basis of duty and determination. So that's still good. But let me tell you, friends, that duty and determination is not a steady platform, actually. Bharti saying, is my screen freezing? Is it okay? Is that my connection or Bharti is, I think, is your connection. Sorry to say. Okay, if it's me, let me know. If everyone, I should be on a good connection here. So we are not always experiencing this, Bhava. So what I want to share with you today is what does it mean to be a Bhava Bhakta? What does it mean to be a devotee who is experiencing transcendental emotion? Does it mean you're running around like the Goswamis? You're running around Birmingham saying, where is Krishna? Where is Radharani? What does it actually mean to be a Bhava Bhakta? And we're so fortunate that we have the Goswamis of Vrindavan who have documented. You see, what the Goswamis of Vrindavan do is they did an amazing job because they took the prema that Mahaprabhu exhibited in his life. And what did they do? They documented what is that prema and how does it come about. But not only did they document that, what is that prema and how does it come about, they demonstrated in their own life what is prema and how it comes about. And let me tell you, they didn't just demonstrate it, but they then distributed it. They distribute it to everyone and say, look, anyone can do it. Anyone can do it because Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, Sadhya Kabu Noi, this Krishna Prem is already within you. Anyone can do it because you're not getting it from somewhere else. Shravanadi Sude Chite Kare Yudoi, simply by hearing and chanting properly, it will come. So the Goswamis, they actually tell us what is bhava. And I'm going to share that with you today, and then I'm going to, we just open it up and see what questions there may be on it. This is very, very interesting. If you want to know whether you're in Bhava Bhakti and whether you are moving towards Bhava Bhakti, a very natural emotional type of spiritual life, these are the nine symptoms that you should look for. This is so practical. This is so deep. This is so profound, given from the very own lips of Rupa Goswami. Okay? And what I'm going to do, just for your own reference, is I'm going to tell you where you can find it so that if some of you are on the internet, well, you have to be on the internet to be in. Be on Skype, right? Madhya 23, 18 to 19. Can someone just put that on the chat? Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter number 23, verse 18 to 19. Yeah, this is powerful, friends. Let us think and contemplate deeply on this verse in the beginning of Kartik, because I think this will give you some direction, some orientation for what to aim for during Kartik. Yeah? So you got it? CC Madhya 23, 18 to 19. Even better if someone can copy and paste the verse. Rupa Goswami says, Kshantiravyarthakalatvam viratir manashunyata ashabanda samutkandha namagane sadaruchi Shaktistad gunakhyane pritistad vasati stale ityadayo nubhavasyor jata bhavan kure jane. Okay. Yeah, everyone got it? Thank you. Okay, let me just, I got it here. Oh, there you go. Thank you. Yeah, put it in there as well. Thank you. These are the nine symptoms of someone in Bhava Bhakti. And if you want to know whether your sadhana is leading to bhava, then these are the nine things that you have to check in your life. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through those nine things and maybe some questions, some reflections, some thoughts will come up in your mind. And this is a good way to judge what is our attraction in devotional life. Okay. First characteristic of someone who has bhava, transcendental emotion, shantir. This is deep. Shantir means different things, but most often when Prabhupada translated it in the context of this verse, he said shantir means forgiveness. It's a very interesting quality. If you have any sense of bitterness, if you have any sense of resentment, anger, animosity towards someone else, if you have emotions which are very, very negative within you towards anyone or anything, it means that there is not space in your consciousness for bhava or transcendental emotion for Krishna to arise. Most of us are imprisoned and blocked from transcendental emotion because of all of our negative emotions that we harbor towards the people, things, and events of this life. When Nelson Mandela was coming out of prison, of course, so unjustly treated, and a devotee came to him and said, here's a Bhagavad Gita, it may help you out. And he was like, I already read this in prison. I got it down, I read it. One of the people in my unit was a Hindu, and he gave me the Bhagavad Gita. I said, wow, did you read it? He goes, I read it. So the devotee said, what did you learn from it? You know what Nelson Mandela said? He said, today I've walked out of prison. I walk as a free man. But the Bhagavad Gita told me that if I don't give up my animosity, my negativity, my feelings of enmity, my bitterness, my resentment, my feeling within my heart that someone unjustly treated me, unless I give up all of those feelings, I walk free from the prison of, I think it's Rhode Island, but I'm still imprisoned. I'm still imprisoned. I'm not a free man. Although I'm a free man, I won't be a free man because my emotions will still be binding me. Look at our scriptures, how much the devotees were willing to forgive. Unlimited examples. Vasudeva and Devaki have all their children killed mercilessly by Kamsa. And after Kamsa's done that act, he has some kind of moment. You see, like even the demons have this moment where it's like a lightning flash. Like for a moment, they're like enlightened. Like, oh my God, I did something wrong. Of course, it all goes dark again very quickly. But Kamsa had this moment of enlightenment. It was like, oh my God, I did something terrible. And Vasudeva and Devaki were just ready. They were ready to forgive and forget. Unless you have forgiveness, there is no bhava. They say one who can apologize is the bravest. One who can forgive is the strongest. And one who learns to forget is the happiest. Think about that for a moment. If you can't apologize or accept something, you have no bravery in your life. If you're not able to forgive others, it means there's a big weakness in your life. And if you're not able to forget and leave the past in the past, you will never find happiness. You'll never find transcendental emotion. So this is so deep. Rupa Goswami is saying, unless you learn forgiveness, there is no bhava. So one quality of the bhava bhakta is that they have incredible forgiveness. Okay, let's move on. Kshantir avyarthakala tvam. Second quality of a bhava bhakta. They don't waste even one moment of time. I mean, that's so practical. Like someone may say, my God, I was chanting this morning, you know, like I was really getting into it. I was getting into the zone. I was zoning in to the Harinam, to the Namaruchi. But then assess the rest of their life. If you're wasting time, Prabhupada would look at the old man playing cards. It's such a waste of time. If we're wasting time in our life, it means that we're still a distance away from Bhava. Because you'll see the Bhava Bhakta waste no time. Prabhupada said, when I go to sleep, now I feel, oh my God, I'm just wasting time. I mean, how many people think like that when they go to sleep? Like, oh my God, like, now I have to go to sleep. You know, it's like, what a drag, you know, like I have to go to sleep. What to do, this body, you know? I mean, no, how many people think like that? We don't think like that. Like here I am I'm sitting in the BMF office, by the way, in the manor. And here there's a beautiful picture of Shri Dharmaprabhu. And like, if there was anyone I ever saw in my life who never wasted a moment of time, it was Shri Dharmaprabhu. He was the first one in this building in the morning waking the deities. And often on the very same day, he'd be the last person out of this building because he'd have a patron council meeting. And those meetings end at like 11 p.m. at night. And the most amazing thing was the next morning he was in. He would show up every single day on top form, enthusiastic, ready to go, not wanting to waste a moment of time. One time he told me, when the alarm goes off, get up, dress up, and show up. This is the most important work in the world. So I was like, okay, I'll try my best. For him, it was so natural. We have to like, okay, you got to control the mind. For him, it was natural. For someone who's experiencing transcendental emotion, they don't want to waste a moment of time. Chanakya says, what is the most valuable thing in the world? Ayushakshana ekopi, one moment of time, because na labhya svarna koti bi, even if you have millions of gold coins, you can't buy it back. Every moment of life is precious. So we can't, there's no, a bhava bhakta naturally doesn't waste any time. And one who wants bhava doesn't waste any time. Somehow or other, we got to fill our life with Krishna. And if we, actually the devotees help us a lot. The devotees help us to fill our life with Krishna. Because they trick us. Isn't it? In the beginning, they're like, okay, yeah, don't worry, man. You don't have to change your life. Just, you know, just add a bit of Krishna, you know, just add. You don't have to, it's not a big change. And before you know it, they arrange it in such a way that you don't have any more space in your life to add anything more because Krishna has hijacked the whole show. Krishna, when he comes into your house, initially he comes into your house and just inhabits one part of one room on an altar. And then he starts taking over that room, and then he starts taking over the whole house, and then he starts taking over the minds and hearts of all the devotees living there. So if we stay with the devotees, then gradually it happens, you know, but we want to live a life where we're not wasting time, because that sincerity of purpose and that engagement is what will bring about bhava. So this was the second point, not wasting any time. This is the characteristic of a bhava bhakta. Next characteristic is virakti, detachment. Detachment is not a word we always like. Detachment means letting go, giving up, walking away. That's not always such an easy thing. See, if you're holding on to things, you see, when we talked about forgiveness, we talked about letting go of emotions. Detachment means letting go of desires, objects, aspirations, hopes in the material world. Just like if you're not able to give up negative emotions, there's no space for bhava. If you're not able to give up material desires, attachments, hopes, aspirations in the material world, then there's no space for bhava. What Krishna basically does is he makes this world in such a way that gradually begin to lose everything. That is the raw reality of the material world. Krishna strips you of everything. You see, if you, according to your karma, you get four good things. Janma means you get a birth where you're surrounded by a series of people. Okay? Aishvarya means you're surrounded by opulence and wealth. Shruta means you're given intellectual ability and capacity to cognitive awareness. Shri means beauty. These are the things you get, good karma. But what does Krishna do? Gradually, he takes away all the people around you. That's the reality. Gradually, Krishna will even take away your wealth. Sometimes, you know, grihasthas, beware of your sons. Sometimes there's four types of sons. I'll tell this another time in full. There's four types of sons, but one of the types of a son is someone who you cheated in your last life, who's come back as your son. And when they come back, when that person comes back as your son, then they lovingly take everything away from you. So, you know, the smiling, charming son may take everything away. Messenger of Krishna. Yeah, so even your opulence, you lose it with time. Lakshmi is chanchal. She's always coming and going. Shruta, your intelligence, your memory, your capacity, even this, you lose it after some time. And Shri, beauty. Anyway, that we don't need to say. Everyone knows, is clear. After some time, you know, is going. Everything goes. Hair goes. Now the sika is getting lower. I was joking with one devotee. I was saying now, as you're, it's like a lifeline. The sika is like a lifeline. It's a good measure of how much life you got left, because gradually it's like it starts here and then gradually it gets lower and lower and lower. And then you think at one point, the sika is just not, that's it, end of life. It's gone, finished. Krishna takes everything away. He's a thief. Vraje prashidam navanita chauram gopan gananam chadukula chauram aneka janmar jita papa chauram chaura graganyam purusham namami. Bilva Mango Thakur sings, isn't it? Krishna steals the butter. He steals the clothes of all the gopis. He steals all your sinful life. Krishna steals everything. I offer my respects to Krishna, the foremost of thieves. Who can catch this thief? So Krishna takes everything away anyway. So a Bhava Bhakta knows detachment. Don't hold on to these things, which anyway will disappear. Rather hold on to Krishna. Krishna will always be there. In Vrindavan, there was no, like, you don't really hear of sannyasis in Vrindavan. Of course, they visit now and again, but you don't really hear of sannyasis in Vrindavan. But actually, the gopis were the greatest sannyasis. Anashrita karma phalam karyam karma karotiya sa sannyasi cha yogir cha nanaragnir na cha kriya, because they never held on. That's the quality of the gopis. They never held on. They were willing. Everything on the line for Krishna. That's what sannyas literally means, by the way. Yas means to place. And san means complete. It literally means to lay it all down. That's what sannyas means. Lay it all down in front of Krishna. So the gopis were the greatest sannyasis. Therefore, Uddhava said, they've given up everything. Yadustyajam swajana mariyapatam jehitvar bejur mukunda padavim shrutibir vimrigyam. They've given up everything, their family, their reputation, their so seemingly their chastity. Therefore, he said, Vrindavane kimapi gulmalato sadhinam. I just want to be a creeper in Vrindavan. So one commentator says, why you want to be a creeper? Like in the bush somewhere. If you want the dust of the gopis, then maybe be on the main road. You'll have better chance, right? But he said, no, I want to be in the bushes as a creeper, because what happens is the gopis, when they go into madness, then they come off the main road. They come off the main road and they go into the creepers and the bushes looking for Krishna. And in that mood of ecstasy, when they're absorbed in Krishna, maybe they'll just step on me and maybe I'll get their dust. Therefore, Uddhava is still there, Kusum Sarova, as a creeper. This year we can't go to Vrindavan, but next time you go, we can remember. Uddhava is there because the gopis were the greatest renunciates. So Viraktir, Mana Shunyata, Bhava Bhakti means no false prestige. Madhavendra Puri was running away from fame. Most of the time we're hanging around like waiting, like when someone gonna appreciate me, when someone gonna recognize me, when someone... Madhavendra Puri was running away from it. And the most amazing thing is, as he ran away from fame, all the fame began following him. In Sanskrit, the word for praise is stuti. Yeah, stuti means praise. Stuti has a double meaning. Another meaning is an unmarried girl. So I don't know, maybe someone else can verify, but what the acharyas say, acharyas say it, so we accept it, of course. They say that an unmarried girl, if there's a boy who really wants her, then she's not attracted. But if there's a boy who doesn't want her, then she's very attracted. So stuti or fame or praise is like that. If someone wants it, fame stays away. But if someone doesn't want it, then it comes automatically. The Vaishnavas don't. But why don't they want fame? The reason we want fame, the reason we want prestige, the reason we want recognition, acknowledgement, acceptance, validation from others is because we are insecure. And why are we insecure? Because we have not connected deeply with Krishna. Krishna is complete, and in our relationship with him, we are complete, isn't it? Ishapanishad says, Om Purna Madhapurnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Krishna is complete, and so many complete units are emanating from him. So we are complete. Krishna is complete. But the problem is that we've become separate from Krishna. Therefore, although we are complete with Krishna, because we've been disconnected from Krishna, because we don't have the connection with Krishna, we're experiencing incompleteness, we're experiencing insecurity, and because we don't have connection, we look for validation, fame, respect, honor, prestige. But the Bhava Bhakta, no desire for false prestige, no sense of false prestige. And my goodness, I'm only on number four and there are already so many more things to say. And I realize we're stopping at eight and I do want to have some discussion. So let me just say that the next five, I'll just list them. Ashabandha means hope. A Bhava Bhakta has great hope. They know Krishna is amazing. It doesn't matter how fallen I am. It doesn't matter how out of it I am. It doesn't matter how many mistakes I make. It doesn't matter how many times I'm falling short. I still have a hope because I know Krishna is amazing. Krishna will help me. Therefore, a devotee, if they've developed some advancement in Krishna consciousness, they'll never leave no matter how much they fall short. Because they know it doesn't matter. It does matter, of course, I'm falling short, but it doesn't matter in the sense that Krishna will help because I have hope, because I know, hey Gopi, Janavallabha, Vithayate, Ha Ha, Madashevaman. Rupa Goswami says, Krishna is very kind. Whatever it is, he'll work out a way to sort me out if I stay in the game. So a devotee has incredible hope. Bhava Bhakti means hope. Samutkantha, eagerness. Eagerness, enthusiasm. Devotees, this is our greatest wealth in life. I'll share with you actually, every day when I go down for Mangalarti at the manor, there's one prayer I make every single day in front of Gokulananda. And I pray to the Lord. I ask the Lord, whatever enthusiasm I have, Krishna, by your grace, please just protect that. Never let me lose my enthusiasm and eagerness. Because without enthusiasm and eagerness, there is no spiritual life. And so we must protect, we must cultivate, we must feed and nourish our enthusiasm and eagerness. And in this way, our spiritual life becomes very, very vibrant. And then, Namagane Sadaruchi, a taste for chanting. This is the Bhava Bhakta. Rupa Goswami says, when I hear the two syllables Krishna, I don't know how much nectar is contained within these two syllables. I desire thousands of mouths, thousands of ears. And when these two syllables enter into the courtyard of my heart, then they conquer all of my senses and render my mind completely inert. I mean, you hear it, you think, wow, this is amazing. So this is Bhava Bhakti. So much. A devotee once asked Prabhupada once asked the devotees, how do you know Krishna exists? So devotees gave different answers. And then one devotee, he said, Prabhupada, because when I chant Hare Krishna, I feel Krishna's presence. And Prabhupada said, yes. Yes. When I chant, I feel Krishna's presence. So the Bhava Bhakta, how is it that if you go, for example, to Vrindavan, Radhasham Sundar temple, and then you ask the pujari that, can I go to see the bhajan kutir of Shyamananda Pandit and Rasikananda? Then he'll take you into the courtyard and then he'll take you underground, like 10 meters underground. And there underground, there's a bhajan kutir. And that's where the Goswamis were doing their bhajan for 8, 10, 15, 20 hours of a day. And you think like, wow. Why? Because when I chant Hare Krishna, I feel Krishna's presence. Nama leads to guna, rupa, and lila. The nam is the trigger. And the nam leads to lila, guna, rupa, everything comes. So who is cultivating that relationship with the holy name? This is what we have to consider if we want to enter into the realms of Bhava Bhakti. Ashakti stad gunakyane means addiction to glorifying Krishna. Prabhupada was just lecturing every single day, talking about Krishna, you know, just writing about Krishna, counseling people about their Krishna consciousness, everything, planning for everything was based around glorifying Krishna. So he was addicted to glorifying Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, long lectures, addicted to glorifying Krishna. Such a harikatha is such a thing. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was once giving a lecture at Sachinandan Gaudiya Math. And in the evening, his lectures were quite philosophical. Many would not also come because they felt like it's too much, too heavy. So the devotees, once he was about to give a lecture and they only rolled out the mat, you know, because in India it's a marble floor, so they put a mat on the floor. So they only rolled it out like one quarter of the way. I think like it's not a high demand at the moment. That should do it. It's like for some speakers, you know, like, yeah, we don't need to go over the 50 Zoom limit, you know, like that would be sufficient. You know, not many people will come. 100, 150, whatever. We make these material estimations. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur looked at him and said, why only one quarter? He said, but not so many are coming in the evening. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him, Brahmayadi Deva Gane. Don't you know when the Harikatha is going on, then Brahma, Narad, Shiva, all the sages are coming. Why you roll it out the whole way? You don't have the eyes to see how glorious this Harikatha is that is bringing in, you know, the devotee has so much taste. Bhagavatam says, Vayam tanu vitipyama uttama shloka vikrame yachrinvatam rasagyanam svadu svadu pade pade svadu svadu pade pade. At every step they're tasting more and more. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami says, ghasite, ghasite, shloka. Just as you rub sandalwood again and again to get more fragrance out, the Vaishnavas, the Rasika Bhaktas, the connoisseurs of devotion know how to speak Harikatha more and more so that the taste, the swad, the ruchi, the katha ruchi comes about. So this is a Bhava Bhakta, so much taste for Harikatha. And then finally, pritistad vasati stale. Bhava bhakti means you have a great love for Vrindavan. Isn't it? Like, the devotees have the t-shirts, isn't it? I lost my heart in Vrindavan. One devotee walked in and Jayad Vaita Maharaj saw his t-shirt. He said, I lost my heart in Vrindavan. So Maharaj looked at him and he said, I hope you lost it to the right person. You know, other things could happen on the, you know, pilgrimage, the yatra, if you're not so fixed up, you know. So we want to lose our heart to Krishna in Vrindavan. So so the Vaishnavas go to Vrindavan, they visit all the places, they hear from the Vaishnavas about the Leela Stan. The Leela Stan, the place where Krishna performed all his pastimes. And by developing a love for Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, Mayapur is my place of worship, Mumbai is my office, but Vrindavan is my home. Once Prabhupada said, Krishna never takes a step out of Vrindavan. Vrindavanam parityaja, padameka na gacchati. Krishna never takes a step out of Vrindavan. And similarly, Krishna's devotee never takes a step out of Vrindavan. They're always living in Vrindavan. Once Prabhupada must have been somewhere in the West, so they just printed the NOI. And I don't know if some of you are aware, but in NOI, there's a picture of the Radha Damodar temple where Rupa Goswami's Samadhi and Bhajan Kutir is. So the devotee was watching Prabhupada and Prabhupada opened the book and he must have opened it to the page where he saw Radha Damodar temple. So Prabhupada opened it. He saw the Radha Damodar temple. The devotee didn't know what Prabhupada was looking at. As soon as Prabhupada opened it and saw it, Prabhupada's eyes like beamed. So the devotee looked at Prabhupada and said, like, Prabhupada, why are you so happy? Prabhupada said, I'm looking at Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan. Prabhupada said, I was staying there. It was too much ecstatic. That's what Prabhupada, that was his term. He looked at the devotee and he goes, I was staying in Radha Damodar. It was too much ecstatic. I mean, from an external point of view, you go there, there's, you know, no facility, nothing. In the Lilamrit, it said that there were always rats running around. I always kind of had that picture in my mind. And once I went to Radha Damodar temple and I stayed in Prabhupada, I was like sitting in his room maybe for a few hours and actually saw many mice running around and rats, you know. So from an external point of view, you see like that. Prabhupada said it was too much ecstatic because he was really seeing beyond what we may see with a superficial eye. So Vrindavan, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the holy dham is like an ocean which is covered by a thin layer of oil. So if you are very superficial, then you go to the dham and you say, oh my God, no good internet connection, no good prasadam, no proper English toilets, you know, too much noise, can't get good rest, thin layer of oil. If you go a little bit deeper, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, you look beyond the external covering, you'll find the ocean of jewels in Vrindavan, the spirit, the mood, the bhava, and then you'll realize Vrindavan, my God, special place, special place. So this is the Bhava Bhakta. So today, this is what I wanted to share with all of you, that, you know, these are the symptoms of bhava bhakti, emotion, a devotee who's developed transcendental emotion. But in our life, we can ask ourselves, how much am I developing these nine qualities? How much am I developing forgiveness? How much am I developing not wasting time? How much am I developing detachment? How much am I developing a freedom from false prestige? How much am I developing the great hope in Krishna? How much am I developing eagerness and enthusiasm? How much am I developing a taste for chanting? How much am I developing an addiction to glorifying Krishna? And how much am I developing a love for Vrindavan? That's the check. That's the spiritual health check. And Kartik, do whatever you can to develop these nine things, whatever it takes. If you develop these nine things, you are a wealthy devotee because you will have bhava very quickly. Hare Krishna, all glories to Prabhupada. So those were just some thoughts. I don't know if anyone would like to ask any questions or make any comments.
Thank you so much, Thapuru, for an amazing class. We've got a couple of questions, if that's okay. And devotees, I know you have 8 minutes. So if you have any more, I think you may just have a little bit of time. So the first question is, your prayer to Radha Gokananda is to protect your enthusiasm. So how do we feed our enthusiasm?
Yes, of course, there are many ways to answer that. You know, when you go to Vrindavan on Yatra, you feed your enthusiasm. When you go on a retreat and you have an intense time of spiritual practice, you feed your enthusiasm. When you hear a class or something like that, you feed your enthusiasm. But essentially, our enthusiasm, if we boil it down to it, is really coming from sadhu sangha. And therefore, if you want to be enthusiastic, you have to search out the sadhus who have, the saintly people who have that enthusiasm. And friends, like, don't stereotype it. It's not always someone in saffron. It's not always someone who has a position. It's not necessarily even someone who's known by the whole world. There are very eager, enthusiastic, sincere devotees around you who are very low-key. But if you search out those very sincere people then and spend time with them, then they will give you. Like it's said that the sadhus are like a receptacle of bhava. They are filled up with transcendental emotion. And it said that because they're so filled up with transcendental emotion and their cup of emotion is overflowing, If you come in their vicinity, then you begin to get a few drops of their emotion and you begin to experience things which are way beyond your current level of advancement. So somehow or other, we have to find those devotees. And we just really don't know who they are. You know? In my life, I realized I underestimated so many devotees. And maybe on another occasion, we can have a whole discussion on that. That don't underestimate the Vaishnavas that are around you. They have some realization, some experience. So try to search out those people.
Thank you, Stopper. We've got another question here. I've just started my spiritual journey with College of Vedic Studies. You spoke about the 9 qualities we should work on, but I feel that would be too much. What is one quality that we should focus on first out of the 9?
So then I'll give the same answer as I gave on the first one, that just make good spiritual friends. And by having good spiritual friends, they will act as almost like a transcendental trainer for you. And what they'll do is they'll help you to understand what aspect of your spiritual life to build at what time. And so, you know, our connections with each other are so much a part of our spiritual growth that there's no spiritual life without association of spiritual people. And so really investing in those friendships and having those guides in your life, then they will be able to give you the specific formula for what you're supposed to do at what your current stage is. So I could tell you that you should do more chanting right now, or you should do more reading, or you should get up earlier. I could give you one thing. But rather, if you develop a relationship with someone who really knows you well and who themselves have spiritual advancement, then they can give you much more tailor-made specific things that will help you in your journey. So don't neglect it. That's the one thing you need to do. Find some good people in your life who can guide you along the way.
Awesome. A slight curveball, interesting question here, Siddhartha Prabhu. If you're involved in a court case, do you put the best fight of your life and then forgive after the court case or before?
What, is this person a lawyer or something, is it?
It's anonymous.
Okay. You see, forgiving doesn't mean you don't take, I'm just going to take it on a general level because I'm not quite sure what that situation is, but let me take it on a general level. Forgiving doesn't mean you don't take practical action. Forgiving doesn't mean that you don't learn from a situation. Forgiving doesn't mean that you just live with your heads in the cloud. Forgiving means is that after all is said and done, you don't hold a grudge in your heart. If someone is harming you, then you may need to take some practical action to distance yourself. If someone is harming you, you may need to do something to resolve it and correct that person. If someone is harming you, there may be something you need to learn from it in terms of your own life. But when all is said and done, you don't hold a grudge. Because the more you're holding negative emotions, and I'm going to hazard a guess that 90% of us on this call have a load of negative emotions towards individuals that we live with, individuals that we've grown up with, individuals that we associate with on a weekly basis, individuals that frankly we feel get on our nerves. All of that negativity is blocking you. So we need to somehow let go. Like, Once a teacher said, this, just pretend this is half full with water. Said, how heavy is this? So one person said 3 ounces, 5 ounces, 10 ounces. He said, you're all wrong. This is as heavy as for how long you hold it. This is not heavy because it's got this much water or this much water or this much water. That's really not what makes it heavy. What makes it heavy is for how long you hold it for. So some of us feel like I experienced this much negativity in my life. I experienced this much negativity. I experienced this much negativity. But let me tell you, friends, even if you experience this much negativity in your life, but you learn to let it go, it ain't going to be heavy. But even if someone did one small thing to you, I mean, I can't believe Russell Raj didn't even acknowledge me in that program. I mean, how could he do that? Small thing. But you hold it. It becomes such a big thing. It becomes very heavy. It weighs on you. So forgiveness doesn't mean you don't take practical action and do all of those things, but it means in your heart, you walk away. Let me just tell you one thing on forgiveness. You see, how is it that a devotee is able to have so much forgiveness in their life? And there's basically two reasons why a devotee is able to have so much forgiveness in their life. One is because they realize whatever is happening to me is something I'm meant to experience, number one. And the second reason is they realize everyone is acting under the molds of illusion. Prakrite kriyamanani gune karmani sharvasha. The gunas are acting on everyone. And so when they see someone do something, they think, oh my God, the molds are acting on that person. And when it's directed towards them, they're thinking, well, there's something I need to learn from this. So, but most of the time we're thinking like, why me? And that guy, he's out of it. So you see, like, we have the complete opposite mentality. First, we're identifying that person as the problem, but a devotee knows that person's acting under the molds. And the second thing is we're thinking we're innocent, but a devotee knows, no, whatever comes to me is something I'm... So when you have that mindset, then you can forgive. How could Vasudev and Devaki forgive Kamsa? How could they do it? It's not a material thing because they had deep realization of these points. It's 8:02, Rasaraj. You can just cut it if you need to.
Sure. Thank you so much, Siddhartha Prabhu, for your association on behalf of everyone here in Birmingham and beyond. We're very grateful.